of those psychotherapists?
Psychotherapy, perhaps. I'm an author. I notice most of my books are here. I've written 15 books in 14 different languages. And a lot of them sort of look at, investigate East, West, and perhaps even a African perspective put together. I'm also an African high chief in West Africa. When I'm in America physically, I find more material for my television shows. Hopefully some of you have seen some of them. I have a TV show with cable in the Washington area for 9 years. But particularly we look at how to solve material problems with metaphysical and spiritual solutions. Also, I'm involved in the Scholar of Conflict Resolution, International Relations, and that's enough. If I go on, you'll say, and I'll say also, and I have a wonderful ego. And I teach how to become free of the ego. So it's for self-purification. I was asked to share something about how to stay more fixed on our paths. We might also ask ourselves the question, how to grow more into our paths? Or how to know when we have grown out of our paths? And how to look a little clearer in some cases at what we see our path as. Let's examine sort of what, why, when, and how. What is our path? Why we've chosen our particular path, or why we'll choose a particular path in the future if we have not chosen something now that we're committing to the rest of our life, or maybe that's the path itself. To constantly look for other paths that incorporates what we're already doing, expands on what we're doing, how to go deeper in what we've already accepted. Why we chose a particular path, when, and how. We might first wonder, why stay in anything? Because we know that what is most categorical and unequivocal is change. Everything is changing. So why should anyone want to stay in anything these days? Especially here in America, you know, in my spiritual journey and my work, often I'm in a different country almost every week or so. Maybe every 4 or 5 days when most of my around the world traveling. And we notice how everything is in so much flux and so much change. Here in America, we change cars about every 5 years or so. Houses about every 7 years. The average person changes professions about 3 or 4 times in a lifetime. The average person changes jobs more than 10 times. In a lifetime. Some of those are sort of maybe inauspicious in terms of getting sacked or fired or whatever. You see, the body is constantly in change. Many of us are getting a little older now, and we have gone through midlife crisis, or we have gone or are entering menopause, and the men, we have our particular kind of menopause, and women have their kind. We look back and we see many people who started certain kinds of spiritual paths with us. Some of them have been traveling with us, we're traveling with them. Others have gone on to something else. And some have decided that they're not so much interested in making the spiritual journey in this lifetime. And some have considered that what seemingly is asked upon one to do to do to adhere to a particular spiritual path is not what they're comfortable with. When we are pursuing a path, three questions should be very prominent in our consciousness. Three ways to sort of come to a rather quick evaluation of what is available, what is expected, to see if it's something that we're comfortable with. But let's look at paths like that first, in this way. First question we should often ponder upon is, what is the goal? If I am successful in the particular path, exactly what is the highest goal that can be experienced, that I can look forth to becoming, to experience, to share, etc.? Because sometimes we have not scrutinizingly tried to come to a better understanding of exactly what is the goal of a particular path that we are following or want to follow. And there are times when we get a better understanding of that goal, we feel even more excited about that path. And then sometimes when we look closer at that goal, we think, maybe I don't want to pursue this any more than I have already. Or perhaps it's not really the best for my spiritual, psychophysiological makeup. After we have looked at what is the goal, we should next ask ourselves the question, what is to be done? What is the authentic things to do based on being able to acquire, to become, to embrace this highest experience that is in concatenation with this particular path? If we are comfortable with the first investigation and realization of what is possible, and if we're not also comfortable with the second, then perhaps that path is not what we want to continue to identify with. Because if we're not ready to pursue what is to be done to acquire what is attainable, then even though we may desire what is attainable, but we're not authentically ready to do that, that will allow that to be a reality for us. Now, if we are comfortable with one and two, then we should ask the third question. And the third question is, where are those persons who have also been eager to attain this goal and were ready and did in fact follow the process of what was needed? And they have attained it. Where are they? What is their behavior? What have they become? Because that's what we will become, what we will experience. We also strive for that goal, do the necessary, and now have the attainment. If we're not sufficiently comfortable in what that entity has become, then again, we might find that it's not the path that we want to go deeper and deeper into. So let's assume that there is these goals that we're very happy about. We each have our own expression. We're all extremely important. It's part and parcel of the universe, of God. We all have the same abilities, ultimately, dormant, in the dormant sense, of possibilities and potentials. How we use a free will, of course, determines what we experience, especially how we use a free will in peace. previous lifetimes, as well as especially earlier times in this lifetime, the choices we're making at the moment determining our futures. We all come into this world with a history. Hopefully when we leave, we'll leave an amazing legacy. So we might want to second look at why. But the why, I guess, wouldn't make much sense until we look first at what. So as we look at these initial things, we have particular paths. And so there are some paths where the goal of that path is to be able to have a more peaceful existence in the material world, where there's a greater sense of honoring unity and diversity and less interferences with our basic eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. So some people are very motivated and excited in pursuing goals that mainly have a lot to do with bringing about a certain kind of social and civic reform where people simply honor each other's physical existence. So they pursue paths of how to be more dharmic, more sattvic, more pious, more kind toward all of creation. Another kind of path may have a goal that emphasizes how to be able to develop certain psychic powers, certain siddhic powers. There are many different kinds of siddhis, many different kinds of mystic perfections. In Vedic cosmology, we have siddhis called Anu, Lakhima, and Prapti City, Nima City. We have cities, Nima City, where we can make the body very small, or the body can become very large. It's like in the most smallest aspects of life, even germs, amoebas, etc., is life. So again, our physical body, there's so many other, tens of thousands of other living entities residing in our body, which is a universe of its own. Then we have huge bodies like Mother Earth, we say Bhumi, or like the sun, or the moon, or the universe is a body, a living entity. And the galaxy is a living entity that is undergoing vast kinds of transitions and transformation. And also has certain goals. It's moving toward. This is now we are on this particular planet. And there's a lot of unusual kind of karma imbalances. So we see there's like massive fear that's growing in so many circles. So many kinds of diseases. So much more physical as well as mental assault. A lot of it has to do with the attacks and the abuse of the major entity on this planet, the Earth entity. It's like our bodies, as your healers, you know. When things are out of balance, one thing affects another. One organ can affect another. When the body is attacked by germs, by viruses, that can become very chronic, take over the whole body in various ways. When the mind is disturbed, it can have such an amazing effect on various organs. A couple of years ago, I was speaking at the National American Medical Association. I was trying to speak in the family practice section. I was trying to sneak in a little alternative medicine, a little bit of psychic and metaphysical concern. As I was just mentioning how our minds have such an influence on our bodies. First, I had to set the stage and to mention how allopathic doctors especially have a serious issue here in America. That we live 10 years shorter than the most professional, shorter lifespan, have more divorce. Especially anesthesiologists have more trouble, you know, with addictions than most other professions. And that psychiatrists commit more suicide than the other professionals. And so it's at this stage first that doctors, we need to work on ourselves. That our lives should start with our lives should in fact be our message. That we've gotten so far away from the kind of initial vows that we've made as practitioners. So I snuck in how when one is not feeling loved, someone is feeling alienated, they're feeling it's not loved. Because everything ultimately has so much to do with love connections. We're starving for love. And when we don't get it, there's so many imbalances and so many perverted ways of things that we do. It's really a cry for love. Jealousy, our enviousness, our fear, all these things. Really cries for love. But when there is so much lack of love that one is hungry for and not experiencing, then so often the mind sends messages throughout the body, through the neurotransmitters, etc. It's like the mental energy in the mind attacks the organs in the body and brings on various types of diseases. Because you know, disease is a very complex thing. And its hallmark is so connected with heredity and socialization and the bad immune system. And in many cases, we know many metaphysical aspects. It's like I'm dealing with certain things now. It has to do with travel, has to do with disciples, has to do with anxiety, has to do with taking on things, has to do with some karma of my own. So, when we look at the goals, look and think, is this what I'm comfortable with? And if so, how do I go deeper into it? And how do I expedite that experience? There is paths that give us these mystic cities where we're able to have the ability to travel to the planets. Or basic astral traveling and soul travel. But one is able to have the property to acquire things from a particular, another geographical environment and bring it forth into one's present environment. Or, you know, the remote viewing where one is able to see and perceive things from other geographical areas to view it as it is happening. And sometimes clairvoyance, if the audience, or we can see into the future and the past, etc. I mean, there are some paths that focus basically on these and many other kinds of paranormal experiences as the goal. And so one who is comfortable with such goal should look closer at what is to be done to have those kind of experiences. And then there are paths that give a major influence on nirvana. Buddhistic paths are somewhat connected with this, where there's a basic, and this is just very fundamental, simplistic presentation, but there's a basic understanding that interaction, relationship, and the duality brings misery, brings pain, and that one can get beyond or go above the duality. And that as we transcend the duality, we also eradicate all of the complexities that's associated with that. It brings us a kind of a simplicity and purity and a oneness. And then there are paths that emphasize this oneness even more. most of our yogic paths, Hatha Yoga, Kriya Yoga, Stanga Yoga, Indigo Yoga, Kundalini Yoga, etc., have a lot to do with being able to acquire cosmic consciousness, be able to experience the universal mind, universal energy, be able to become one with the ultimate Shakti that is moving and controlling all things. And to experience a kind of a godness with this realization and empowerment. And in their past, they emphasize that there is also the connection where one transcends the duality, experiences the oneness and the unity, but at the same time experiences spiritual variety, spiritual variegation. In other words, spiritual relationship. So all of these kinds of paths have particular things to do to be able to more expediently have experience and attain a goal. And all of these kinds of paths have acharyas or prophets, adepts who have become very expert in that. And in some cases who transcended into this realm already having that or already being that to share it with others. There's some entities that are having karma that they are here in this particular universe as part of their own school or teaching and excel in the school to become self-realized. There's a higher kind of entity that comes already from a self-realized plane, platform, realm, dimension. They're not always the same. And they come not so much because they are learning or part of the school or part of the reformatory, but they're mainly coming as rescuers. They're coming sometimes as bounty hunters. They're coming sometimes to expedite conscious raising on the planet. We have a lot of that going on now at this time in both polarities. We have an amazing amount of beings who come from higher realms, higher than this Marchaloka or the Earth-like existence. And they've taken human-like forms, and they're engaged in human-like activities, but they're really not residents here. Now, unfortunately, some of those who have taken birth at this time, very amazing time in planetary history. Similar to what Charles Dickens once said, how this is the best and the worst of times. So some of those entities who have taken birth to be very special types of light workers on particular paths, so many of them have become absorbed in the normative patterns of this world to such an extent that they have minimized, in some cases, they've put on hold their particular mission. This may be an important aspect to talk about as we go on in this short little discussion. I mainly want your questions to what you want to talk about. Because some of you may fit into this category. Because the nature of this planet is so intensely full of duality. See, there are so many lower realms where there is so much intense darkness and so much intense sadness that it becomes hard to make expedient transition. It's like when someone is very, very destitute, maybe you can think about just how to become somewhat relieved of that immediate suffering. It's hard to explore for more refined things. But there are also higher heavenly planets where there is so much comfort, where everyone, every resident would have psychic powers according to our perception on this particular plane. Where practically every aspect of life is more intense. The intoxication, the sex life, the beauty, the longevity, everything is much more intense with less interferences, disappointments, and setbacks. Some of these higher realms where the angels and the Gandharvas and the Vidyaharas and the Apsaras, etc., where they reside. In many ways, are not as auspicious as this earth-like existence. Let me explain that. This is in some of the lower realms, there's so much misery that the main focus is just how to eradicate, arrest that immediate misery. And some of the higher planets, there is so much comfort, satisfaction, and temporary joy that one becomes intoxicated by that and somewhat paralyzed by it. So it's these kind of existences, earth-like existences, that are so much full of a certain kind of duality that sometimes the same thing that makes you happy frustrates you the same day. But there's so much intensity of the duality, which is good for the elevation of the soul because it can cause one to keep on pursuing the path. It can cause one to keep on feeling that sometimes intuitive knowing that there's something else, and also that external involvement, trying somehow to find it, because one is not as satisfied as those in the heavenly kingdoms, and one is not so incarcerated as those in the lower realms. So because of that, we always have this interesting flux on this planet, especially at this time. Of entities who come in from the higher planes, these are not those who are fully liberated, that's another category. But those who are in a higher state, they come here to do some work. And sometimes even though they are higher, but they have to experience this or they have to give something, sometimes they begin to become just like the environment. The sad part of what happens when this takes place, that the entities who come in from the lower realms, and those who come from the lower, they're graduating and they come here. And those who come from the lower and they're empowered, also with all kinds of amazing mystic cities, they're empowered for destruction. Just as we talk about the things to do based on the path, so many of the rituals and things that we do, it opens us up. It gives us certain. It awakens some of the dormant faculties and realizations. And some of the things connect us with various kinds of divine interventions and empowerments. But just as you can open up the door, and so many people like yourself, wonderful people come into this wonderful house, you can also open up that door, and that could a thief could come. So as we do various types of rituals, it opens us up. And one can do various rituals in such a way that they can bring in also power or empowerment that can connect us with lower sources. So there's some entities who consciously know this and they involve themselves in such ways and they come here to recruit. And this is higher entities come in to recruit, to help, and to encourage. And some come on missions of reclaiming. Sometimes spiritual teachers, it's like you have certain ambassadors. You have some people work in the diplomatic corps. So they're in the diplomatic corps, and so they may be posted now as an ambassador in Italy, and then a few years later, the ambassador of France. This is their profession. You have some entities who move about to different universes, and they do similar kind of things in each lifetime for the good of humanity. And you have those who come and they do similar kind of things based on degradation. So we have significant call for those like ourselves, who in many cases have taken birth, to pursue a life beyond that of just eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, and trying to see how to do that better. Because, as we know, that if life is only about perfecting eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, an intelligent person at the end of life will feel that they cheated themselves. And in my work and travels, some of the coaching I do, sometimes I'm shocked to see how much the super famous and rich, how much they suffer. There's a certain kind of suffering when you don't have, and you have to be worried about what creditors are calling you now. Huh? There's a certain kind of suffering. But there's another kind of suffering when all the basic things that you have wanted, you now have, and you're miserable. So it takes real passion out of life. When one doesn't really have much aspirations, but it's just an anxiety about trying to somehow pretend to be happy, and an anxiety about how to try to make others happy while they are suffering like anything. So obviously life cannot just be about just trying to have material things, because we know everything that we acquire materially, we're going to lose it. Doesn't matter what it is. Everything we strive for material, we are going to some point lose it, whether it's our house, our car, our fame, our job, whether it's our own body, everything is going to, we're going to have to walk away from it. The soul is going to leave it behind. So now the question is, what is the soul goal? And what kind of path are we excited, exhilarated with what needs to be done to, you know, to attain that? And where we have taken birth to involve ourselves in the spiritual journey, how do we avoid getting distracted? Let me talk about this last part and then put it all together and take a few questions. Some of the things that distracts us from our spiritual quest, from attaining those goals that we really want to attain. Sometimes success. Many times, success can be our worst enemy. Like some of you are in business. So sometimes, what allowed you to be successful at a particular time was wonderful at that time. And often because we were able to be successful at that time based on certain other variables being in place, we continue thinking that we're going to be successful in the future when things have changed. So there are times when success becomes our greatest enemy because it causes us to keep on doing the same thing in the same way, when the field of activities may be different. As we're going on into the next decade, the amount of sin on the planet is amplifying. The amount of intrusions on the lower realms is intensifying. And therefore, for one to make constant progress, they must be able to also amplify and intensify their devotion. The same devotion that someone had 10 years ago, even 5 years ago, is not sufficient for success today and for success 5 years from now. So sometimes we become disturbed in the path because we are doing what is necessary, but not with the intensity that's needed for today when we have more opposition. And so we have to keep revisiting our commitments. We have to keep asking ourselves, why did I join this, join that? Why did I come into this particular group, that particular group? Why? And as I made that choice, what did I commit myself to? Now, how do I look at my commitments today in terms of now what that can mean in the future by finding the niche to be able to intensify those commitments so that I will not become a casualty on that path? Or I will not lose courage to go on trying to go beyond this leading an ordinary life. When, say some of the ladies, when you want to have a very wonderful dress made, do you go to an ordinary tailor? When you want to buy a mansion, do you go to an ordinary realtor? If you want to learn from some of the best in your field, do you look for just the ordinary practitioner? We really don't want just the ordinary when we are serious about something. We want the extraordinary. No one who's just used the ordinary in their thinking can make a major contribution to raising consciousness. Even in almost any achievement, someone just going to do the ordinary thing will not usually be able to, you know, to be a high achiever. So first we want to not to be intimidated or embarrassed in not just being an ordinary mason, ordinary psychotherapist, ordinary massage therapist, ordinary entrepreneur, ordinary coach. Nor do we just want to be an ordinary religionist. We don't want to be the kind of religionist who is just so fixed in our own comfort zone. We're so fixed in our own space, whatever our particular tradition, religion is, that we're okay. The hell with the rest of the world. The hell with other paths. We're okay. No problem with being chaste to whatever one commits him or herself to. But that chastity should be in such a way that it goes beyond just our own egocentric concerns. But that we live it in such a way that it improves on the quality of life. Or sends a message out to others on their path to be more diligent and serious and expedient in what they have to do. Do other things. So success can bring pride, it can bring stagnation. Whenever we become pride, we have this pratishtha or pride, what can happen is that we can lose protection. When pursuing our spiritual paths, it is really not healthy to think about trying to do it alone. We're surrounded by so much negativity. Healthy alliances, those we see and do not see, is very important. We lose our humility. We especially lose so much of the protection that comes from those who are our caretakers, watchers, who are there, who are not physically manifested, who are available to help us. But they help us so much in according to our consciousness. So we have too much pride in the consciousness, we cheat ourselves, and we block off so much internal help, blessings and protection and guidance that comes. from special agents that assist the Lord and the Lord in the heart, from so many other aspects. Another thing that weakens our resolve is a lack of faith. When we are pursuing a particular path, although our mind shouldn't be about immediate results, but if somehow that path isn't giving us some kind of results, then our faith will become weak. Or if we found that particular path and we're not getting healthy results, we may have to look a little closer and see if that is really the right path for us. Where sectarian religion may be a process to help a person to feel good, but dynamic spirituality helps a person to be good and to carry, as they move into different environments, their realizations that impact upon the environments. So holistic spirituality is not retreating from the world, even though we may retreat at different intervals. But it's mainly to help to heal the world. It is not so much. You like my prayer beads? I have some prayer beads in here. It is not so much about just trying to save oneself as it is in trying to make oneself stronger to be able to save or to help others. It's not so much about being fearful of God, but it's a matter of being a lover. Not so much a matter of doing things just out of duty, but it's out of realization, joy, and love. And so some of what would normally be called religion has been more and more hijacked as people are afraid to go deeper into the interior and to work more on themselves through the high-end institutions and behind religions, etc. And that causes stagnation on the path. When we begin to think that the spiritual journey is just a bureaucracy in the institutionalization, and therefore we hide behind such while minimizing working on ourselves. So the pride, success, stagnation that comes with that, the lack of faith, with either the lack of potency of the path or the lack of authentic following the practices ourselves. Then the third and perhaps last is lack of compassion. Nobody can stay on any bona fide path if their compassion is not increasing. Because when your compassion does not increase, then it becomes very hard to follow a rigid path that is going to bring amazing results when you're just thinking of yourself. And not thinking sufficiently at what it means if you are not an achiever. See, there are millions and millions of people on this planet who do not have the karma in this lifetime. They all have the ultimate free will and ability. But in this lifetime, they do not have the karma to be light workers. They do not have the basic desires connected with the previous life. So they're in this world, and they're really just mainly fixed on materialism. And they're headed for all kinds of suffering. So those souls in the minority who do have the spiritual calling and who do not pursue in the spiritual calling, not only are they cheating themselves what they can ultimately become and experience, but they're being so insensitive and harsh to those souls who are waiting to be helped by them as we do what we are supposed to do. So without sufficient compassion, one will often feel that whatever is not working or happening in his or her life, whatever obstacles, one will then allow those obstacles to stagnate them, to stop them. But as we have a higher compassion, in spite of those obstacles, we realize that we have something to do and we're on a mission, and that energizes us to move on, to continue, in spite of the obstacles that will come and we must experience. Because it is from many of those obstacles that allows us to unfold. So many of those obstacles that allows us to go much deeper in our realization. There's another kind of goal that emphasizes getting out of the prison, or as far as I'm sorry, being in the prison, but having certain powers, rights, certain cities. Another type of goal emphasizes being free of the prison and free of the duality. And another type of goal that emphasizes having certain connections with the universal mind, intelligence, universal energy, universal consciousness. There's certain kind of goals that emphasize being in the soul, in the spiritual body, having spiritual relationships eternally, where there's eternal associations and experiences. And all of these kinds of goals have certain things to do and have certain people who have acquired or have achieved. And in any of these paths, that there is some criterion, some regimentation, and there's all kinds of distractions. And we said some of those distractions can be pride, success. Some of those distractions can be lack of faith. Some of those distractions can be a lack of compassion. As we said in the background, some of those distractions that people have come into the world to be able to be change agents. They get too caught up in the normative patterns of what most people do here. And when we forget why we've come, or we lose some of our determination to become what's available for us, then we add to some of the incoherence. We make it easier for entities of the lower realms and consciousness in lower realms, from physical coming from lower realms, to have more impact on the planet at this time. So we should look then again at these different ways of evaluating sometimes a path. And we ask ourselves, and I'll conclude with this, what is our path? Some of you have distinct paths that you're on. Some of you, your path is visiting other paths from time to time. Some of you, all of us, we ask ourselves, what exactly is our identity? We comfortable with it? If not, we keep shopping, look on. Are we comfortable with what the goals are? Are we comfortable with what has to be done? Are we ourselves authentic about what is needed to be done based on that? Are we comfortable with it? Each of us ask ourselves, why did we come to a particular path? Was it more out of a proactive concern? Or was it somewhat reactive? And this is somewhat caught up in how. Then we look at when. What was going on with us? What was going on with our families? What was going on within in the community and the society? And most important, as we look at the what and the why and the when and the how, we must consider every single entity on this planet has full opportunity to become maximally absorbed in God consciousness. And that as we have more and more internal desire to especially to help others. We will be drawn to a certain kind of paths that will give us more facility to do that. But if we are minimizing or procrastinating with our compassion, we'll lose some of the potency to be consistent on our journey. We'll lose a lot of potency to be able to reach out and help others. So much of our own strength comes from our desire to help, our humility. It brings protection, and it brings facilitation. So let me stop there, and let's see what you may like to a little closer at from your questions. Some of these things I talk about in some of my books. Maybe 2 minutes, I'll give you a quick book tour. I'm always on a book tour, so I'll constantly say something about one or two of my books in a minute. Yes.
One of the things you said was that we need to increase our devotion, and I was wondering if you could talk about that and what does that mean? How do you do that?
Yes. First thing is, we talked about our bodies being a vehicle or a universe. So we know we have a body, we have intelligence, we have senses, we have mind, we are the soul. We know that we are spiritual beings undergoing material experiences. So our devotion starts first with ourselves, how we treat our own bodies. As we treat our own bodies with more healthy care, it allows us to be a better instrument of God, of service to humanity. We first have to look a little closer at what are our own habits. What do we do with what we have? What are we doing when it comes to eating, mating, sleeping, and defending? Are we trying to honor our body the best we can by what we put into it? Or are we committing so much violence toward our bodies? We're trying to be agents of love, then we so much can give, so much based on what we have, what we received. It's hard for someone to love you very deeply if they're having such lack of love toward themselves. It's hard for you to give somebody great love if you're committing too much violence toward yourself. So we may first want to look at and see from our own day-to-day habits, are we minimizing hearing violent sounds? Are we being somewhat selective about the violent things that we see and and view? Are we being more selective to see that our speech is not an expression of violence? Are we being more careful to see that our coming together for union is actually a matter of love and peace, and it's not selfishness, it's not your lust, it's not violence? Let's look a little closer and see from our eating, from our speaking, from our hearing, from our viewing, from our relationships. Are they relationships of love and devotion, or are they expressions of violence? So the more that those relationships are relationships of love and devotion, the more devotion and love brings more love and more devotion. And then we can try to look at certain types of rituals, excuse me, that involves our physical presence more as a reminder that we're spiritual beings. When we go into our rooms for meditation, we engage in the chanting, in the toning, we engage in certain particular rituals, that it's good to do it with regulation. Because what we do repeatedly, we get more of that. And it gives us a sense of identity. It's like when you leave the house and go to work. It's good that you leave the house with certain spiritual protection before you leave your house. that you do some prayer, you do some reading, you do some chanting, you listen to something that is conscious raising, you read something that's conscious raising. So when you're going out into that battlefield, gross and subtle, you're going out with a certain protection and devotion. When you come back into the house, that before you start eating, before you do things, that you take a shower in consciousness, and even a physical shower, so that you are intensifying yourself, having been out there in the battlefield. Now you come into your shrine, your sacred place. Your home should be a sacred place. That is an environment that reminds you of your spiritual calling. And your home is your spiritual books, your spiritual music. And your home is a place where you have a certain amount of control, so the energy of that house is in this world, but not of the world. And then they have distinct associations where you are interacting with people who are also of higher consciousness, that you're able to have alliances and you're able to energize each other. See, association is very significant in our lives. There's kind of no such thing as neutral association. Wherever we go, we're picking up something and we're sharing something. And since now in these days, most people are intensely in intense anxieties. And so many of you, you know, you're caretakers. So even more so, you have to protect yourself. You're dealing with people constantly, with neurosis and psychosis, people with totally some heavy, heavy depression. And as you are hearing and listening and being around such people, you're also picking up so much of their energies. We're all around people who are full of greed and anger and lust and fear. It's like a battery. It has to be recharged. And so our devotional activities should help us to recharge ourselves. Now, when we don't do that, then we go into the environments of good intention, and then we start getting diminishing returns. We start wondering what's happened to your enthusiasm. Well, you're constantly going out, getting zapped every day. If you're not having some associations and some rituals in your life, some discipline to build yourself up, then after a while, you start feeling like the people who you are associating with. You start thinking, taking on some of their consciousness. So war is already going on in so many ways. This subtle war is very intense. And we must be careful not to become too wounded. We do get wounded, we must be able to bounce back. And that's where the devotion and the good association of the good sanghas, you know, come together, and people are able to come together. And now people with higher consciousness are sharing that through discussion, through bhajans, through kirtan, through prayer, through meditation. Other questions? Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes. What would you say about work people should do on their minds if people see how they're allowing that affects the world? What we have in our minds is what we have.
In one of my leadership books, I mentioned how we must watch our thoughts, because our thoughts produce our words. Our words, we should definitely be careful about, because the word produces our actions produces our habits. Habits, you know, our character, and from our character, you know, comes our culture. So everything goes back in the thoughts. So we're finding we're having too many negative thoughts, lusty thoughts, angry thoughts, whatever, to pull the mind back. Now, how do we do that? The mind is so overwhelmingly, you know, distracted by so many things. That again has a lot to do with what is getting fed, what is in the environments. It's very hard for the mind to be so different from what the constant environments are. So we have to be able to create our own environment that gives solace to our minds. And that's as much as we can, what we can, you know, be able to regulate, that we try to do. You can see, I mean, those of you who are working with people with, you know, mental disorders, it's increasing every year. several TV programs that I've been doing lately, I've been stressing how World Health Organization has put out these reports that in the next 14, 15 years, mental illness is going to be one of the greatest destabilizers to the global community. It'll come up all the way to number two. And mainly because of a rise in depression. It doesn't matter what part of the world, people are becoming so overwhelmingly depressed. And a lot of it has to do with so much identification with commodities in the body, so much identification with selfishness. Because in one sense, depression is a lack of sending out sufficient love. When you're sending out sufficient quality love, there's no time for depression. Any other questions? I have one written here. For taping, can you... Oh.
That was
for me. Oh, taping. Can I repeat the question? I know we're taping. Any other question? Yes, please. Yes. So she's asking my books talk about how I find the path. It's mostly part of my traveling entourage. She's letting me know, okay, now Swami, talk about the books for a minute. let me just do a minute and a half little presentation here. I mean, is this spiritual way one? In the bottom. I have a couple of different series of books. First, I have a series of books called Spiritual Warriors. And this is sort of emphasizing that the spiritual journey is a battlefield. And that just as now people are so much active in waging war, it's important for spiritualists to wage peace. And waging peace is not just an emotion or sentiment, but it's a way of thinking, but it's a way of acting also. So I have this series called Spiritual Warrior, emphasizing the mind, you know, as the battlefield. So the first book is called Uncovering Spiritual Truths in Psychic Phenomena. So I look at all kinds of metaphysical and psychic things, and then I try to show the spiritual aspect of that. So this is one. So number two, I think we're out of, one of my most popular books. Number two is mainly a relationship book. It's called Transforming Lust into Love, which we don't have here. Anyway, you might find that in the future on one of my websites. Number three is Soul is for the Heart in Difficult Times. And this book looks at world order problems and gives various solutions for the individual, for the family, and also for the community and for nation states. This came out during the World Parliament of Religions. The foreword is by the director of the World Parliament, saying this is a very special kind of offering for the world at this time. Then I have Spiritual Warrior 4 and 5 for psychiatrists and psychotherapists. These two are my newest books, actually. Last year when I finished another one of my 40 country world tours, I was just amazed at the amount of suffering that not only is going on in the secular communities, but also in the spiritual communities. I visited many, many different kinds of spiritual institutions and communities and lots of seminars and workshops and all kinds of things. So I wanted to put together a book that would embrace so many of the cutting edge or modern things that we know about in psychotherapy and psychiatry. But I wanted to bring in the spiritual aspect as well. I was looking at panic attacks and psychosomatic effects and looking at traumas and depression and suicide, etc. And just seeing that, there's so much out there, but people are suffering more and more and more. And how can we look at these things from a more holistic perspective? So I put together two books addressing this issue. Fourth is called Conquering Over the Enemies of the Mind. And fifth is called Making Your Mind Your Best Friend. And I have reviews and comments by psychiatrists and psychotherapists in America and in Europe saying how there's some special, you know, variables that are included in these books to help in dealing with various kinds of mental challenges. Then I have a leadership series, like a bookstore here. This was one of my first books. Before I start working more in America, I'm American, but before I start doing more things here, and I'm just gradually getting back into America, I did a lot of my work in the communist countries, Hungary, Poland, Yugoslavia, those countries. And then I started working on the African continent. So once I was doing a TV show in one of the West African countries, and a short time later I was visiting with the president of that country, and he and several of his ministers asked if I would be a consultant for the country. In those days, my basic involvement was as a monk. I'm a celibate monk, and I was just spending most of my time, you know, in monasteries and ashrams. And so when he inquired this from me, I was sort of thinking, you know, how to do this. Even though I had this, you know, general training in international relationships and conflict resolution, but I sort of put a lot of that on the hold. So it dawned on me, you know, by the time I had met 15, 16 presidents of other countries, I'd given them a sacred books. But sometimes in meeting up with them at the other times, I saw that they really didn't read the sacred books, and even a few who did, they really didn't understand it. And I gave them Bhagavad Gita's, I gave them, you know, some things from Upanishad. I mean, I gave them books that were really powerful, but they just couldn't get into it. So I thought that I would like to put together a book that I could put into a diplomat or a president's hand that would help him or her to work on themselves first, raising their consciousness. And then would give them some basic, significant ideas and plans and strategies for nation building from a more humanistic perspective. So I put this together. You know, it's more than a book. It's like a handbook. You know, it's a workbook. Every chapter has different things and practices and things to do. It was sort of like spiritual espionage in one sense. I almost told them. It's called Leadership in Age of Higher Consciousness, and the subtitle is Administration from a Metaphysical Perspective. That's in small letters. And the reviews from United Nations personalities and diplomats. And to, you know, legitimize it, the forward is from a high-level gentleman in the United States Pentagon. Interesting, a monk and the war machine working together. But that was number one. And then number two, it's also leadership. It's called Leadership in Age of Higher Consciousness, Ancient Wisdom for Modern Times. Now, the foreword is written by Stephen Covey's ghostwriter, Ken Shelton. This book does something also quite interesting. In the first leadership book, it was a little more, I would say, secular. In the second book, I wanted even a bolder type of presentation. But I wanted it to be bolder, and that it would have more update techniques and successful leadership, management, administration, but at the same time would give so much more esoteric information on leadership. So what I did was I divided the book in half. The first half deals with discourse, the most ancient discourse on leadership known to humankind. It's a discussion from Bhishma to Yudhisthira, from the Vedic texts of ancient India. And the second half just looks at all the kind of avant-garde stuff that's being taught now in some of the MBAs, things that some of the topmost coaches in the world are giving out. And I thought, I'm going to try this. I was thinking, this is going to be a big failure, because the materialists are going to think, why all this spiritual stuff? And the spiritualists are going to think, why all of this material stuff? And I'm going to lose both audiences. But after you had 14 books, it doesn't matter anymore. You can lose one or two books, you know, and you write it off, right? And there are so many different languages, I thought, even if it doesn't work in American and English, in Russian, in Croatian,